Live from Chicago's Progressive Talk Studios on Milwaukee Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. In our third and final hour of the program, around here we call him Mr. Bike, it's the return of David Glowatz. And now your host, man, these days we can call him Mr. Bus. Chicago Reader columnist, Ben Jarofsky.
All right, I voted for Dan, Mr. Buss. I thought you said Mr. Biss. I voted for Dan Biss, but I don't think I love Dan Biss as much as Mr. Bike loves bikes, okay?
That's impossible.
It's impossible. Yeah, maybe Harold Washington. I did love Harold Washington, but that was many, many years ago. Haven't had a politician that I love so much. With me in the studio, independent journalist Dave Glowatz. He reports on local government at shygov.com. He's also Mr. Bike. That's what we know him as, Mr. Bike, a bicycling instructor and author of the best-selling paperback, Urban Bikers Tricks and Tips. Mr. Glowatz, welcome back, Cotter.
It's great to be here, man. Happy vernal equinox, by the way.
I was about to say the same thing to you. You
really?
Took the words right out. D, hey, get your little party hat.
Do you feel the days getting longer as we sit here?
Yes, the days are getting longer, man. Now, before we dive in to the issues of the day with Mr. Bike, Dave Glowatz, and ask him who he voted for. Let's see. Dennis has been ducking and dodging me, Dave, all day long. You know, I keep going, Dennis, who'd you vote for? I got to go to the bathroom. Dennis, who'd you vote for? I got a phone call.
Dennis, did you vote today or did you early vote?
I got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Well, that's not asking to take a stand. I'm just curious.
I got a phone call.
Yeah. Hey, he voted today, as did I. I have this little, this little.
I didn't take an armband, a wristband when I voted.
Did you vote today?
I voted on Friday.
Oh, they don't. That's like wimpy voting, all right? This is like stepping up.
I'm not a millennial, so I don't vote on election day.
Wait, millennial? Wait, I did not know that.
So the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners reported on the huge early voting turnout, but they found that most of the people who early voted were over 50 years old.
Is that right?
That's right.
You know what? I have like these millennialistic things happening to me. I'm on Instagram. Okay. I voted today, like with all the other millennials. I did not know
that. You do look a little younger than
that. Yeah,
last time
I am looking younger. And next St. Patrick's Day, I'm going to go out and get drunk and be obnoxious on a train.
Wait, that's a year from now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll be plenty of time to practice.
Who knows how young you'll be by that time?
All right, young Dennis. Who did you vote for?
Boy, Jessica. Those judges. That's the hardest part of all of it. I'm just like, that guy, I don't know, that guy or gal seems like a cool name.
I had a cheat sheet for the judges, and my wife came with me. We're like back to back. She was, hey, she kept tapping me on the shoulder. Which judge? I don't even technically.
Isn't it against the law?
He could have been, but
aren't you on the radio right now?
Oh, I shouldn't be saying this. In the studio with me, Dave Glowatz, otherwise known as Mr. Bike. Dave Glowatz reports on local government at shygov.com. That's CHIGOV.com. He's also Mr. Bike, a bicycling instructor and author of the best-selling paperback Urban Bikers Tricks and Tips. He's in the studio right now. And see, here's the thing. I'm going to tell you guys a little secret about Mr. Bike. Dave Glowatz, known him for about 10 years now. He likes to ask the questions. He doesn't really like to answer the questions. But we locked the door. He's not going anywhere. You can't duck and dodge and run away.
Unlock the door.
Okay.
You sound really mean on the radio right now.
I wasn't scared walking in here, but...
All right, we unlocked the door. All right, young man, Dave Glowatz.
Have you talked about write-in votes?
Yeah, there was a write-in vote. The write-in vote for Water Wreck.
That's right.
We've had people say they put your name in, Ben, for Water Wreck.
You know what?
A few of them.
I know a lot about water. I drink it.
You do wallow in the cesspool of politics.
Yes. I'll take every vote I can get, and I'll give free water to everyone.
So don't be surprised if you get a call a little later.
Hey, what if I win? Oh, my goodness. I'll have to go to Water Wreck meetings. Hear.
Hey, you got any money for ads?
Yeah.
No, I have no money.
Hey, Mr. Bike, you any good at hosting radio shows?
shows.
Yeah, I'll be at the Water Rec meeting. All right, Dave Glowatz.
So write-in. Did you do a write-in?
No, I did not do the write-in.
You notice the blank? There was one Water Rec commissioner slot that there was no one. This is the Democratic ballot.
That is correct.
There was one slot that there was no candidate.
Yes.
So that's where one could have written in Cam Davis.
You could write in. I think there's Frank Avila was running as well, so you didn't just
was
have
it really?
Yeah.
What are the rules? Like, could be an official write-in candidate to actually get elected?
I'm not certain about the rules, by the way. This is excellent. I got to tell you about Dave Glowatz. This guy doesn't want to answer the question that was asked him, so he just asks his own questions.
I did vote for Cam Davis.
Duck and dodge. All right. So I do not know the rules and regulations governing writing candidates, so though I do believe that you have to apply to be a writing candidate beforehand. So the days where like Bozo the Clown gets votes or...
So the bar is a little lower than getting on the ballot officially, but there is a bar to
there's
entry.
A procedure, yes.
Yeah, you got
to
register.
You have to register. That's the word, register. Yeah. All right. So, young Dave, who did you vote for governor?
I was torn.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't vote for Bob Dibber.
Okay.
The three-state solution was intriguing to me.
Mr. Marshall, he was in the studio about a week ago.
Oh, you got him in.
Yeah. Okay.
But I decided in the end that I kind of like having a state capital that's far away.
So, as opposed to having it in Chicago.
Well, it's virtually in Chicago.
Yeah.
We could talk about this someday, that a lot of the state offices are duplicated in Chicago.
At the Thompson Center.
Yeah, yeah, which is an interesting...
Which they're going to sell. Well, Rauner's trying to sell it. We'll see.
There's legislation that allows the sale.
The sale. Has that legislation passed
yet?
Yeah,
that passed.
We should have Al Riley on, state rep from the South Suburbs, who knows more about this than any man alive. All right, so you were in the midst of your explanation of that you didn't vote for Dibber or Marshall. But,
and I got to tell you, I had a problem voting for governor. That was the first thing on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And because I early voted in Chicago, early voting places have touch screens. And I usually early vote, you know, so I kind of know the routine. But this year, when I went to touch, nothing would happen. So I had to like, you know, keep stabbing at it, you know. And finally, I learned the technique for this machine. I had to lay my finger across. I don't know how many people got screwed up by that. So when I tried to vote for governor, I was like, like I thought maybe there was one of those. Remember in the last presidential election, people were talking about how their vote would change right after they voted.
Yeah, was in Ohio, was it? I don't know. Maybe it was in Illinois.
So
as
that's
well,
what I thought was going on here.
Yeah.
I'm like, geez, you know, I got to have to bring a poll watcher over or something. But eventually my vote did get registered.
We could save everybody a lot of time and trouble if we just allow the votes from the Ben Jarofsky show today to be the official.
Here's another question I have is, have you ever been surveyed after you came out of the polling place?
No, never. Exit polls? Nope. Never, ever.
We hear about them after every election, but I don't know anyone who has ever encountered an exit.
No, and I'll tell you what, I got some troubles with that one before I let you duck and dodge the attorney general's race, because so much of how we view an election is based on the results of these exit polls. For instance, it goes without saying, I think it's 54% of white women voted for Donald Trump in 2016. That's like universally applied, even though, again, that's based on an exit poll. That's just an estimation.
And that's the statistic that caused me to go around asking everybody I knew, so did you get polled? And nope, not here.
I see. And then the other one, of course, is they somehow or other, they found an exit poll that said 8% of black people voted for Donald Trump. And we just know that's not true. Stop saying it. But they keep going around saying Donald Trump got 8%. I think Donald Trump says it. David Axelrod says it. Anyway, all right. Attorney
General. I've never been outside a polling place and seen anybody asking people who they voted for either.
No, I've never seen that either. As far as I know, they're completely made up. There's no evidence. You know,
somebody got a great consulting gig.
You know, it's
here.
A consulting gig, but we stand by that, and it is very problematic. All right, Attorney General.
Let's see. Who were my choices? There were 20 on the that was
seemed
tough.
Like
that. Yeah,
it
was
a tough one.
I knew who I didn't want to vote for. There are certain people who, let's just say, already spent a lot of time in state office that I thought, pretty sure, don't want to do that.
Okay. So I guess you're talking about former governors of the state of Illinois who are running
Perhaps.
For attorney general.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, assessor.
assessor. So you and I had this conversation the last time I was here around strategy. Mm-hmm. When you learned that Andrew Arela was back on the ballot, you were like, oh, I'm so going to vote for her. But you said when the Tribune revealed all this information about J.B. Pritzker's trusts and offshore companies, you thought, oh, man, I got to switch my vote, because then in that case, you were thinking strategy.
Right.
So
I don't think I was ever voting for Pritzker, but
if I recall correctly, yeah. You said, I'm not going to vote for Diber anymore.
Yeah, that sounds like something I said.
Switch.
Yeah. Very interesting.
But you didn't do that with the assessors.
When
right?
you use my quotes against me.
Let's roll the tape.
Yeah, let's roll the tape. Actually, I will vote for Andrew Arela regardless of what the Tribune. They were very effective, very powerful, saying cannot vote for Andrew Arela because it means effectively a vote for Berrios. But I would rather vote for Andrew Arela. That meant more to me than the likelihood that would mean a vote for her would lead to
their strategy and then their strategy.
Wheels within wheels within wheels.
Ben, we have a question. All right, let me look and see who this is from first off. I believe this is from our friend Andrew. Andrew
okay.
is his name, all right? Mm-hmm. Andrew, I guess earlier he heard you on one of your many rants on Amazon today. Mm-hmm. And Andrew writes, Ben, you're great. All right, remember that part, by the way.
Yeah, let's just end it there. Okay, thanks, Andrew. Hey, I love that comment.
Let's just highlight and underline that part.
All right, let's move on. I feel a but coming.
You're great.
But?
But?
Yeah.
You're wrong. Some of us out here do want Amazon HQ. Where else are you going to get 50,000 jobs? If you can answer that, tell us. By the way, did you notice that every gubernatorial candidate supported it?
No, Vote first of all, town. It's not true that everyone supported it. And by the way, does Andrew say where he lives?
I didn't see.
He said out here.
Out here? Yeah, out where? You're not in Chicago. You're not paying for it, Andrew.
And now he said you're great.
Andrew, you're great. I love you. But if you don't live in Chicago, why do you get a say? That's what I said to Dana Gordon, who was my guest at the 3 o'clock hour. She lives in Highland Park. She goes, Ben, why don't you want Amazon? I go, I'll tell you what. I'll take Amazon if Highland Park pays for it. How about that? And then she was like, habita, habita, habita. Uh-huh. Just like Mr. Pike when I asked him who he voted for. Habita, habita, habita.
I don't recall saying that.
It wasn't an exact quote. Anyway, we'll get to that. I have no problem if Amazon wants to come to the city of Chicago, but I do believe at the very least that the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois should do a very serious cost-benefit analysis where they determine what are the benefits and what are the costs. Right now on the table, they are offering at least $2.25 billion. It will undoubtedly go up if Chicago makes it to the next round. This is a bidding competition, folks, controlled by Amazon, not the city of Chicago. So it'll go up. And there's also prime city land that's in TIF districts, which means it will generate no property taxes for the people of the city of Chicago. It'll just generate TIF money for Amazon. So we have to decide how much is this really going to cost us and whether that cost is equal to the benefits of whatever jobs they bring. And we don't even know for certain how many jobs they bring. They say 50,000 jobs, but they also say they don't want to be held accountable if they don't create 50,000 jobs. So the only thing they want is at least $2.25 billion handed to them right away with nothing promised. So that's why I am very, very, very reluctant to sign onto this deal. Young David, go.
There was a point made by Lori Lightfoot that I heard this past week, who's the president of the Chicago Police Board, and she made a speech talking about what kind of leadership and civic effort should we have to reduce the levels of crime that we see in Chicago that result most likely from deprivation and poverty and some desperation in parts of our city. And she said the kinds of leadership that we need are similar to the kinds that were exhibited by, 500 or 600 co-signers of the Amazon bid, civic and government leaders who stepped up to say they were in favor of the Amazon bid. She said, imagine if leadership in this city were able to marshal that same level of cooperation and backing to try to reduce poverty and to improve living conditions in Chicago. She said that's a good demonstration of the leadership that's needed around those kinds of issues instead of Amazon.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I will say this, the reality is that if Amazon were to come to Chicago, with all the money that we would give them and with the land that we would give them and with the TIF dollars that would divert from our public schools, et cetera, it would continue the trend of gentrification that Chris Kennedy very rightfully criticized Rahm for back during the early days of the campaign. So effectively, instead of trying to solve the problems of poverty, we would simply be moving poverty to a different location. Now, that may be the solution that people in Chicago want. Clearly, that's the solution that Mayor Rahm wants. But I don't know if the rest of us want to sign on to that because we still live here. And so we need to figure out some way to pay for our police, pay for our schools, pay for our streets to be clean, pay for our firefighters. So, folks, you shouldn't let yourself just be bamboozled by PR campaigns cooked up by the mayor. You're smarter than that. You know what, Dave? Please explain this. Why do Chicagoans are so quick to mock and malign Trump voters in Michigan because they fell for Trump's BS, and then they turn right around and eat whatever the mayor feeds them? Please explain to me why Chicagoans do that.
Well, I think they're surrounded by the mayor's messaging. You and I have talked about in the past what an effective messenger and messenger the mayor is. He's, I think you'd agree, much better than his predecessor
daily
around messaging. Yeah. He assembles his, I think, two things. One, he assembles his talking points very carefully, or his staff does. And then he relentlessly hammers at them.
He does. And he's like Trump-like. It doesn't matter if what he's saying is not true or not completely accurate. He'll say it anyway.
It's hard to avoid.
Yeah. Like, he's so stubborn. Like, he keeps saying the same thing. I'm like, you know, graduation rates are all-time high, test scores are all-time high. And, you know, Lord knows what any of it means.
That's why he's a good agent for whatever agenda there is out there that's being carried out.
All right. Enough on Amazon for the moment. I'll be talking a lot about that down the road. Dave Gloatz is a journalist who spends a lot of time writing and thinking about Chicago politics, but he's also a shrewd analyst of transportation issues in the city of Chicago, trying to get more people out of their cars, onto their bikes, onto buses, onto public transportation of any kind, trains, et cetera, or just walk. We could do that, right, Dave? We could just walk.
Walking's a little pedestrian for me.
So, okay, he's got a million of them. But anyway, as a homework assignment, I made Dave read two articles from the New York Times. I do this to many guests. I send them articles to read before, you got to read this article.
It's like a graduate degree.
I know, it's like a grad. But I thought they were very interesting articles. Let's break them down point by point. Let's take with the first one. This is near and dear to your heart, about the bicyclist in New York City who did his own study of the bike lanes. Tell folks a little bit about it.
One of the things that resonated with me is that, I don't know if you know that I used to be a telecommunications engineer working for AT&T. And I have a fondness for Alexander Graham Bell. So the name of this bicyclist in New York, his name is Alex Bell. And so what he did, according to this New York Times article, is he put his own camera or cameras on, I think it was one facing north and one facing south in Upper Manhattan. He looked to see how often buses were being blocked by parked vehicles. And he found, surprise, they were being blocked quite often. So this is an issue, I think, in all major cities. And and anybody who rides buses in Chicago knows it's a huge issue, one that the CTA has been grappling with, is how to keep buses on time. You're familiar with this concept of bus bunching?
Where the buses are all together. Yeah, I'm very familiar with it. I see it all the time. Yeah.
I did some interviewing around this a few years ago. I talked to lots of bus drivers, and there are tactics like passing up a stop when you have to, or waving the bus driver behind you on when you find that you're getting behind. But no matter what the CTA does around that, traffic will screw it up, you know, especially when there's cars parked in the bus stop. So there's a number of ways to mitigate this. There's three predominant ones. One is with photo enforcement, if traffic enforcement to try to like nail the motorists who are parked, who are obstructing the buses, particularly at bus stops or in bus lanes where they exist. Second is signal prioritization, where the bus gets to control the traffic signal as it approaches it. And the third one is quick boarding, where everybody pays ahead of time and so the bus doesn't have to sit there, you know. In New York City, I checked, and they tried to do some photo enforcement as a trial a few years ago. And what they did is they had two things. They had either cameras on the buses themselves. So when a bus approached a car that was parked in the wrong place, it would snap the picture. or they would have, as this guy Alex Bell did in New York City, they had put cameras on poles to record. And they issued tickets, and they had two positive results. One is they got a lot of money from the tickets, as people in Chicago will understand very well who have been subject to that kind of thing. But secondly, buses sped up. It was night and day. So the CTA is not, as far as I know, I'm bringing this back home here to mm-hmm. Chicago. The CTA, as far as I know, is not working on photo enforcement. But I spoke to a planner at the CTA recently who said they are working on signal prioritization, where they'll put a device, they're doing this already, they put a device on the bus that communicates with another device on the traffic light. So when the bus approaches a green light that's about to turn red, it will keep it green until the bus gets through.
I see.
Or if the bus approaches a red light, it'll change it green, if that's an appropriate thing to do. And they're rolling it out very quietly, but that's one thing that they're doing. So all this sort of was triggered by this article about this guy, Alex Bell, in New York. And one of the things that his advocacy, I think, is doing in New York is it's calling for increased use of the tactics I talked about. So there are some New York City Council members who are now calling for photo enforcement deployment on New York. But there's one problem with New York that they have that we don't, is that the transit agency is controlled by the state.
Mm.
So they literally need acts of state legislature quite often to do these kinds of things.
Everything in Chicago is controlled by our all-powerful, omnipotent mayor who could just snap his fingers.
Advantage, disadvantage,
advantage.
Pick your poison.
He's,
man, you know?
He's always snapping his fingers about stuff that nobody wants, like Amazon. Not to go back to that. Yeah, and in New York, of course, it's far more congested than Chicago, at least the parts of the city. He's talking about Manhattan, Alex Bell, the guy in the story. But I thought it was very interesting. He did his own independent study and sort of substantiated what you and I and everybody else who's ever been on a city bus has come to realize, that a bus lane really isn't much good if there's a car parked there making a delivery or waiting for some friend to come out.
It looks like a great parking space if you're a motorist.
Yeah, right.
And why not?
Yeah, I guess the real problem is there's too many cars in the city, which is a favorite theme.
It's a chicken egg thing. You want more people. I want more people to ride buses so they get out of cars. But if the bus is blocked by traffic, it's not going to be a reliable option.
Yeah, absolutely. The second article that I sent Dave Gloatz and required him to read was one which was bizarre even for California. For some reason, Dave, I'm really intrigued with what California is trying to do. It is a laboratory of ideas. Some of them were goofier than others, and I don't always abide by them. But, you know, it's interesting little techniques that they're trying to deal with the problems of the world. And one of them would be regarding growth-oriented development. No local control, which is, I used to write so many articles about zoning spats in Chicago. Tell folks a little bit, what I mean by no local control.
This law that is proposed in California would implement what we call here in Chicago and across the country transit-oriented development, mm-hmm. which is the idea of putting higher density buildings, mostly residential, in places close to transit stops. And in Chicago and elsewhere, it's mostly around light rail and train, like the L, but it could be by bus stations as well. In California, the law was to allow this to happen and to overrule local zoning laws. And zoning is the way that cities, urban planning 101 here, zoning laws are the way that locals have control in neighborhoods to make sure that things don't get developed out of hand, like mm-hmm. huge sprawling developments, right. That there aren't things built out of scale with the rest of the neighborhood. As I read this New York Times article about California, the proposed law would overrule local zoning. In Chicago, we don't have that challenge because when local developments come in, quite often the alderman has final say over a proposed zoning change or the density of a development. Because we have that home rule, quite often it's not an issue.
Yeah, it was something that struck me as a guy who's lived in Chicago since 1981 is unbelievably alien, and it's bizarre, the notion that we would give up local control. It's interesting, the Sierra Club came out against the proposal, even though you would think it was environmental friendly. The whole point of it is to get as much development as they can near transportation. They came out against it on the grounds that they want local control.
Well, the environmental friendliness is not monolithic. It's not just one thing. If you end up with fewer cars. Another thing I didn't mention about transit-oriented development, one of the things that quite often, and this is true in Chicago, the regulations allow is allow developers not to put in on-site parking. In Chicago, I don't know if people know this, there's actually a law that says for, you know, multi-unit buildings, you have to have sometimes, at least one parking space per dwelling unit, which, you know, if you have a 300-unit building, you've got 300 parking spaces. Yeah. So TOD, transit-oriented development, allows developers not to do that. So just because that results in fewer cars, if it results in way, way, way too high density out of scale with the neighborhood, that could argue against it environmentally because too high scale can result in other things.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. I'll be curious to see if anything like that emerges here in Chicago. I doubt it. All right, I want to thank Dave Glowatz for being in the studio. Great job as always.